The Hercule is a Happy Beast by Theodore Sturgeon. This all happened quite a long time ago. Lyrt is either in a different universal plane or in a different island galaxy. Perhaps these terms mean the same thing. The fact remains that Lyrt is a planet with three moons, one of which is unknown, and a sun, which is as important in its universe as is ours. Lyrt is inhabited by Gwyk, its dominant race, and by several less highly developed species, which, for purposes of this narrative, can be ignored. Except, of course, for the Hercule. The Hercule are highly regarded by the Gwyk as pets, in spite of the fact that a Hercule is so affectionate that it can have no loyalty. The prettiest of the Hercule are blue. Now on Lyrt, in its greatest city, there was trouble, the nature of which does not matter to us, and a Gwyk named Hvav, whom you may immediately forget, blew up a building which was important for reasons we cannot understand. This event caused great excitement, and Gwyk left their homes and factories and strubles and streamed toward the center of town, which is now... A certain laboratory door was left open. In times of such huge confusion, the little things go on. During the 10 days that shook the world, the cafes and theaters of Moscow and Petrograd remained open. People fell in love, sued each other, died, shed sweat and tears, and some of these were tears of laughter. So on Lyrt, while the decisions on the fate of the miserable Hvav were being formulated, Gwyk still fartled, funted, and fumped. The great central Huton still beat out its mighty pulse, and the anoms in the corsons grew. Into the above-mentioned laboratory, which had been left open through the circumstances described, wandered a Hercule kitten. It was very happy to find itself there. But then, the Hercule is a happy beast. It prowled about fearlessly. It could become invisible if frightened, and it glowed on the legs of the tables and at the glittering, racked walls. It moved sinuously, humping its back and arching along on the floor. Its front and rear legs were as stiff and straight as the legs of a chair, and the middle pair had two sets of knees, one bending forward, one back. It was engineered as ingeniously as a scorpion, and it was exceedingly blue. Occupying almost a quarter of the laboratory was a huge and intricate machine, unhoused, showing the signs of development projects the galaxies over. Temporary hookups from one component to another, cables terminating in spring clips, measuring devices standing about on small tables near the main work. The kitten regarded the machine with curiosity and friendly intent, sending a wave of radiations outward, which were its glow, or purr. It arched daintily around to the other side, stepping delicately but firmly on a floor switch. Immediately there was a rushing, humming sound, like small birds chasing large mosquitoes. And parts of the machine began to get warm. The kitten watched curiously and saw, high up inside that cluster of coils and wires, the most entrancing muzziness it had ever seen. It was like heat flicker over a fallow field. It was like smoke vortex. It was like red lead neon lights on a wet pavement. To the Hercule kitten senses, that red-orange flicker was also like the smell of catnip to a cat, or anise to a terrestrial terror. It reared up toward the globe, hooked its forelegs over a bus bar. Fortunately, there was no ground potential, and drew itself upward. It climbed from transformer to power pack, skittered up a variable condenser, the setting of which was changed thereby, disappeared momentarily as it felt the bite of a hop tube, and finally, teetered on the edge of the glow. The glow hovered in midair in a sort of cabinet, which was surrounded by heavy coils embodying tens of thousands of turns of small wire and great loops of bus. One side, the front of the cabinet, was open, and the kitten hung there fascinated, rocking back and forth to the rhythm of some unheard music it made to contrast this sourceless flame. Back and forth, it rocked and wove, riding a wave of delicious, compelling sensation. And once, just once, it moved its center of gravity too far from its point of support. Too far, far enough. It tumbled into the cabinet, into the flame.
Small town was writing on a blackboard. He was writing the word Madagascar, and the air was so sticky and warm that he could feel his undershirt pasting and unpasting itself on his shoulder blade each round A he wrote. Behind him, there was a sudden rustle from the moist seventh graders. His schooled reflexes kept him from turning from the board until he had finished what he was doing, by which time the room was in a young uproar. Stott about-faced, opened his mouth, closed it again. A thing like this would require more than a routine reprimand. His 40-odd charges were writhing and squirming in an extraordinary fashion, and the sound they made, a sort of whimpering gurgle giggle, was unique. He looked at one pupil after another. Here a hand was busily scratching a nape, there a boy was digging guiltily under his shirt, yonder a scrubbed and shining damsel violently worried her scalp. Knowing the value of individual attack, Stone intoned, "Hubert, what seems to be the trouble?" The room immediately quieted, though diminished scrabbings continued. "Nothing, Mr. Stott," quavered Hubert. Stott flicked his gaze from side to side. Wherever it rested, the scratching stopped and was replaced by agonized control. In its wake was rubbing and twitching. Stott glared and idly thumbed a lower left rib. Someone snickered. Before he could identify the source, Stott was suddenly aware of an intense itching. He checked the impulse to go after it, nodded his jaw, and swore to himself that he wouldn't scratch as long as he was out there, front and center. "The class will..." He began tautly and then stopped. There was a something on the sill of an open window. He blinked and looked again. It was a translucent, bluish cloud, which was almost nothing at all. It was less than a something should be, but it indeed was more than nothing. If he stretched his imagination just a little, he might make out the outlines of an arched creature with too many legs, but of course that was too ridiculous. He looked away from it and scowled at his class. He had had two unfortunate experiences with stink bombs, and in the back of his mind was the thought that of having seen once, in a trick store window, a product called itching powder. Could this be it, this terrible itch? He knew better, however, than to accuse anyone yet. If he was wrong, there was no point in giving the little geniuses any extracurricular notions. He tried again. He swallowed. This itch was... The class will... He noticed that one head, then another, and another was turning toward the window. He realized that if the class got too interested in what he thought he saw on the windowsill, he'd have a panic on his hands. He fumbled for his ruler and rapped twice on the desk. His control was not what it should have been at the moment. He struck far too hard, and the reports were like gunshots. The class turned to him at once, and behind them the thing on the windowsill appeared with great distinctness. It was blue, a truly beautiful blue. It had a small spherical head and an almost identical knob at the other end. There were four stiff, straight legs, a long, sinuous body, and two central limbs with a boneless look about them. On the side of the head were four pairs of eyes of graduated sizes. It teetered there for perhaps 10 seconds, and then, without a sound, leapt through the window and was gone. Mr. Stott, pale and shaking, closed his eyes. His knees trembled and weakened, and a delicate, dewy mustache of perspiration appeared on his upper lip. He clutched at the desk and forced his eyes open, and then, flooding him with relief, pealing into his terror, swinging his control back to him, the bell rang to end the class and the school day. "Dismissed," he mumbled, and he sat down. The class picked up and left, changing itself from a twittering pattern of rows to a rowdy kaleidoscope around the bottleneck doorway. Mr. Stott slumped down in his chair, noticing that the dreadful itch was gone, had been gone, since he had made that thunderclap with the ruler. Now, Mr. Stott was a man of method. Mr. Stott prided himself on his ability to teach his charges to use their powers of observation and all the machinery of logic at their command. Perhaps then, he had more of both at his command. After he recovered himself, than could be expected of an ordinary man. He sat and stared out the open window, not seeing the sun-swept lawns outside, and after going over these events a half dozen times, he fixed on two important facts. First, the animal he had seen or thought he had seen had six legs. Second, that the animal was of such a nature as to make anyone who had not seen it believe he was out of his mind. These two thoughts had their corollaries. First, that every animal he had ever seen which had six legs was an insect. Second, that if anything was to be done about this fantastic creature, he had better do it by himself. And whatever action he took must be taken immediately. He imagined the windows being kept shut to keep the thing out in this heat, and he cowered away from the thought. He imagined the effect of such a monstrosity if it bounded into the midst of a classroom full of children in their early teens, and he recoiled. No, there could be no delay in this matter. He went to the window and examined the sill. Nothing. There was nothing to be seen outside either. He stood thoughtfully for a moment, pulling on his lower lip and thinking hard. Then he went downstairs to borrow 5 pounds of DDT powder from the janitor for an experiment. He got a wide, flat wooden box and an electric fan and set them on a table he pushed close to the window. Then he sat down to wait, in case, just in case, the blue beast returned.
Thank you.
when the Hurgle kitten fell into the flame. It braced itself for a fall at least as far as the floor of the cabinet. Its shock was tremendous then when it found itself so braced and already resting on a surface. It looked around, panting with fright, its invisibility reflex in full operation. The cabinet was gone. The flame was gone. The laboratory with its windows lit by the orange Lyrtian sky, its ranks of shining equipment, its hulking complex machine, all were gone. The Hurgle kitten sprawled in an open area, a sort of lawn. No colors were right. Everything seemed half-lit, filmy, out of focus. There were trees, but they were not low and flat and bushy like honest Lyrtian trees. These had straight, naked trunks and leaves like a portal's tooth. The different atmospheric gases had colors. Clouds of fading, changing, faint colors obscured and revealed everything. The kitten twitched its camphors and ruddled its comb. Right there where it stood. For no amount of early training could overcome a shock like this. It gathered itself together and tried to move, and then it got its second shock. Instead of arching over inchworm-wise, it floated into the air and came down three times as far as it has ever jumped in its life. It cowered on the dreamlike grass, darting glances all about, under and up. It was lonely and terrified and felt very much put upon. It saw its shadow through the shifting haze, and the sight terrified it even more, for it had no shadow when it was frightened on alert. Everything here was all backwards, wrong way up. It got more visible instead of less. And when it was frightened, its legs didn't work right. It couldn't see properly. There wasn't a single solitary malapec to be throtted anywhere. It thought some music, happily, that sounded all right inside its round head, though somehow it didn't resonate as well as it had. With extreme caution to move again. This time its trajectory was shorter and more controlled. It tried a small, grounded pace and was quite successful. Then it bobbed for a moment, seesawing on its flexing middle pair of legs, and with utter abandon, flung itself skyward. It went up perhaps 15 feet, turning end over end, and landed with its stiff forefeet in the turf. It was completely delighted with this sensation. It gathered itself together, grunting with joy, and leapt up again. This time it made more distance than altitude and bounced two long, happy bounces as it landed. Its fears were gone in the exploration of this delicious new freedom of motion. The Hurgle, as has been said before, is a happy beast. It curveted and sailed, soared and somersaulted, and at last brought up against a brick wall with stunning and unpleasant results. It was learning the hard way, a distinction between weight and mass. The effect was slight but painful. It drew back and stared forlornly at the bricks, just when it was beginning to feel friendly again. It looked upward and saw what appeared to be an opening in the wall some 8 feet above the ground. Overcome by a spirit of high adventure, it sprang upward and came to rest on a windowsill, a feat of which it was very proud. It crouched there, preening itself, and looked inside. It saw a most pleasing vista. More than 40 amusingly ugly animals, apparently imprisoned by their lower extremities in individual stalls, bowed and nodded and mumbled. At the far end of the room stood a taller, more slender monster with a naked head. Naked compared to those of the trapped ones, which were covered with hair like a mawson's egg. A few moments' study showed the kitten that in reality only one side of the heads was hairy. The tall one turned around and began making tracks in the end wall, and its head proved to be hairy on the other side too. The Hercule kitten found this vastly entertaining. It began to radiate what was, on alert, a purr or glow. This fantastic place. It was not visible. Instead, the trapped animals began to respond with most curious writhings and squirmings and susurrant rubbings of their hides with their claws. This pleased the kitten even more, for it loved to be noticed, and it redoubled the glow. The receptive motions of the animals became almost frantic. Then the tall one turned around again. It made a curious sound or two. Then it picked up a stick from the platform before it and brought it down with a horrible crash. The sudden noise frightened the Hercule kitten half out of its wits. It went invisible, but its visibility system was reversed here, and it was suddenly outstandingly evident. It turned and leaped outside, and before it reached the ground, a loud metallic shrilling pursued it. There were gabblings and shufflings from the room which added force to the kitten's consuming terror. It scrambled to a low growth of shrubbery and concealed itself among the leaves. Very soon, however, its irrepressible good nature returned. It lay relaxed, watching the slight movement of the stems and leaves. Some of them may have been flowers in a slight breeze. A winged creature came humming and dancing about one of the blossoms. The kitten rested on one of its middle legs, shot the other out, and caught the creature in flight. The thing promptly jabbed the kitten's foot with a sharp black probe. This the kitten ignored. It ate the thing and belched. It lay still for a few minutes, savoring the sensation of the bee in its clavicle. The experiment was suddenly not a success. It ate the bee twice more and then gave it up as a bad job. It turned its attention again to the window, wondering what those racks of animals might be up to now. It seemed very quiet up there. Boldly, the kitten came from hiding and launched itself at the window again. It was pleased with itself. It was getting quite proficient at precision leaps in this mad place. Preening itself, it balanced on the windowsill and looked inside. Surprisingly, all the smaller animals were gone. The larger one was huddled behind the shelf at the end of the room. The kitten and the animal watched each other for a long moment. The animal leaned down and stuck something into the wall. Immediately, there was a mechanical humming sound, and something on the platform near the window began to revolve. The next thing the kitten knew, it was enveloped in a cloud of pungent dust. It choked and became as visible as it was frightened, which was very. For a long moment, it was incapable of motion. Gradually, however, it became conscious of a poignant, painfully penetrating sensation which thrilled it to the core. It gave itself up to the feeling. Wave after wave of agonized ecstasy rolled over it, and it began to dance to the waves. Served only to make the animal in the room scratch hysterically. The Hurkle felt strange, transported. It turned and leaped high into the air, out from the building.
Mr. Stop. 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 Stop.
caught sight of the blue beast, quite invisible now, but coated with dust, so that it was like a bubble in a fog. It bounced across the lawn in huge floating leaps, leaving behind it diminished patches of white powder in the grass. He smacked his hands one on the other and, smirking, withdrew to strike him. He had saved the earth from battle, murder, and bloodshed forever, but he did not know that. No one ever found out what he had done, so he lived a long and happy life.
And the Hurkle Kitten? It bounded off through the long shadows and vanished in a copse of bushes. There it dug itself a shallow pit, working drowsily, more and more slowly. And at last it sank down and lay motionless, thinking strange thoughts, making strange music, and racked by strange sensations. Soon even its slightest movement ceased, and it stretched out stiffly, motionless. For about 2 weeks. At the end of that time, the Hurkle, no longer a kitten, was possessed of a fine, healthy litter of just under 200 young. Perhaps it was the DDT, and perhaps it was the new variety of radiation that the Hurkle received from the terrestrial sky, but they were all pathogenic females. Even as you and I. And the humans. Oh, we bred so. And how happy we were. But the humans had the slidey itch. And the scratchy itch. And the prickly or tingly or titillative parasitic formication. And there wasn't a thing they could do about it. So they left. Isn't this a lovely place?